Nashville, and I believe has family here. But he, I respect this man. The first time I met him was actually this morning. Although we went to his shul, his synagogue in Jerusalem, my wife Frances and I, when we were there, I think it was a couple years ago. And unfortunately, his wife had been taken ill that night, was in the hospital, and so he wasn't there. But we were so impressed. It's, I believe, perhaps the only Orthodox style Messianic congregation, Messianic Jewish congregation in Israel. And so I respect this man greatly. He has pioneered that work in Jerusalem. And I want him to share for a few minutes whatever God puts on his heart. Rabbi Joseph Shulam, would you please give him a warm welcome?
Thank you, Ken.
Yes, sir.
I went to school here in Nashville in the 1960s, and I survived. I went to Lipscomb, not very far from here. I was the only Jew and the only troublemaker on the campus. The dean actually kicked me out from Lipscomb because I brought some black students from Tennessee A&I on campus. That was in 1968, 4 years after the Civil Rights Bill. And the dean called me to his office the next morning and said, "You are dismissed, you know, go home. We don't want you here." I said, "Just fine. From here, I'm going to the Tennessean and telling the Tennessean why a Jewish boy is getting kicked out from a Christian university." My friends were waiting for me to find out what the verdict was outside the administration building. And I was telling my friend what happened, my friends what happened. And then the other dean, the dean of students, came out and says, "The president of the university wants to talk to you." So I went, I didn't want to go alone. I took two of the professors to protect me from the president. And he said, "Joseph, you are one of our most valued students here. You're not really kicked out." He got the message. And then I ran for student body president on a minority ticket as Juan Carlos Rosenblum. And for many years, there was a ghost runner for the student body president at Lipscomb that was called Carlos. Nobody knew who he was. But I'm always glad to be back in Nashville. My son lives here, and my daughter-in-law and my grandson live here. So I always, when I'm in the States, I always come here and visit Nashville. Yeah, the Nativia ministry is one of the oldest, actually it is the oldest Messianic Jewish ministry in Israel. We started it in the early 1970s, long before there were Messianic Jews in America. The Messianic Jews were born actually in America in 1975. Before that, all the Jews that believed in Yeshua were called Hebrew Christians. The problem with Hebrew Christianity is that you can't translate it to Israel, in Hebrew. Because if you say Ivrim Notzrim, it sounds like blind Christians. The word Ivri, it can be spelled with a bet, and it means a Hebrew. It was spelled with a Vav, but it sounds the same. It's blind. So it didn't work to call ourselves Ivrim Notzrim, Hebrew Christians. And the first people that invented that name, the first person who invented that name, Messianic Jews, was actually a Catholic. He was the Cardinal of Paris. Not Jewish. And he wrote a book in the early 1950s called Messianic Jewish Theology. His name was Jean Danielou, and he died 80 years old in a brothel in Paris. The official line is that he went there to minister to the professional women. I believe it. Why not? You know, 80 years old. You know. But I bring you greetings from Jerusalem and from the Nativia Bible Instruction Ministry and from the Roi Israel Congregation in Jerusalem. We have a new building, very beautiful building. We were the first to be totally independent. We don't belong to any denomination. We're not connected to any mission, not in any place in the world. And the leadership has to be always only Jewish. Gentiles are welcome as visitors. But in Israel, we have to be, you know, we have to be consistent of who we say we are. We can't, you know, be weird. Yeah. And our non-Jewish brothers are brothers and sisters, and we value them a lot. We couldn't survive without them because we need their money. But our message is one. Yeshua is Jewish, the New Testament is Jewish, the whole Bible is Jewish, and Gentiles were always welcome to join the people of Israel and to be grafted into the natural olive tree through the blood of Yeshua HaMashiach. Now this parasha, Parasha Beshalach, is a crucial parasha. It is a pivotal parasha because of what happened in this parasha, the children of Israel spent another 38 years in the wilderness. So it's very important for us to understand what really happened there. That everybody, the 12 spies that Moses sent to the land of Israel, all spoke the truth. Everything that they said was the truth, and they all were in agreement. When 12 Jews are in agreement, you should always suspect that something's going wrong. Yeah. And what was going wrong? 10 of the spies spoke the truth, the same almost word for word what the other two also said. But the conclusion was different. One of the conclusions was logical, realistic, and no faith. God did not figure out into that formula. Logic did, reason did, scientific analysis did, but no God. David Ben-Gurion, our first prime minister, said, in Israel, if you don't believe in miracles, you're not a realist. And it's true. Everything about the Jewish people, from the return of the Jews from the diaspora in the middle of the 19th century, the return started in the middle of the 19th century. And it's very interesting because before the Jews returned there, you know who came to prepare the land? Christians. Christians immigrated to Israel in the 1800s, from the middle of the 1800s, Russians that were the first. They were called Subotniks, Sabbath-keeping Russian Christians. They came in droves and settled mainly in the Galilee. There were hardly any Jews in the Galilee at that time, but they settled in the Galilee with the idea that when the prophecies will be fulfilled and the Jews will start coming back. The Jews don't know how to farm. They don't know how to work with their hands. They're bookkeepers and bankers and jewelers and lawyers and doctors, but they don't know how to farm. So we're going to teach them how to farm, how to survive in this land of swamps and hostile population around. So They moved there in the early 1800s, like 1840. They started to come in, and they built farms. And when David Ben-Gurion, Yitzhak Ben-Zvi, Weizmann, and all these people that came from Ukraine, from Russia, in the beginning of the 20th century, where did they go? They went to work in the farms of these Subotnik Russian Christians. And they learned to work the land. There would be no kibbutz, no moshav, no villages in Israel if it wasn't for those Russians. Next to them came the Germans, German Templars, Christians, read the Bible and understood that it's time for the Jews to return home before Herzl. And they came, spied out the land, settled in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, and in Haifa. And actually, they were the seed that built Tel Aviv. Before there was Tel Aviv, there was a city called Sharona. Sharona, after the Sharon Valley, Sharona was all German. And they were very big Zionists until Hitler came to power. When Hitler came to power, they all became Nazis. And then when the British came at World War I, after World War I, they all got kicked out from Israel. And the British kicked them out because they were Nazis. But the Americans also came. There are two American colonies from the 1800s, one in Jerusalem. Today it's called the American Colony Hotel. It's one of the finest hotels in the Middle East. And in Tel Aviv, it's where Beth Emanuel is. Beth Emanuel was a part of the American colony. And you know who was the leader of the first American colony that came there? It was a woman. But they also were Russians that were from Boston. They moved from Russia to Boston, from Boston to Jaffa. There was no Tel Aviv yet. Count Ustinov was the American missionary. He was a Jew. American missionary came to evangelize the Jewish people in Jaffa. And you know who was his son? Peter Ustinov. Yes, Peter Ustinov, the famous actor that played a great role as Nero in Ben-Hur. Yeah. So Messianic Jews have a connection, even with Hollywood a little bit, because you know who started Hollywood? Which Jews? How many of you have David Stern's book, the Jewish New Testament or the Complete Jewish Bible? You have that? David Stern's grandfather is the guy who brought the movie industry to California. So you have a connection of Messianic Jews with a lot of things happening in Israel and in America. But why was God's anger so kindled from this event of the return of the spy? I mean, God was so angry. He says, I'm tired of them. I will finish them off. In the Hebrew it says, chapter 14, verse 12, Akenu bedever ve'orishenu ve'aseh otcha legoy gadol ve'atzum mimenu. I will destroy these people. And I will take you, Moses, and I'll make a new nation greater than they are from you. Not from Abraham, but from you. I mean, this is pretty serious when an artist says, I'll destroy my artwork and I'll start over. It's a serious event. You know, artists usually don't do that. And God is the artist who created the world, and he's the one who called Abraham, and he's the one who promised Abraham that he and his seed will be forever on the face of this earth. And in this moment, God was so angry with Israel that he said, okay, I'm going to wipe them out, and I'm going to start a new nation out of Moses. Listen, if it was happening in an American corporation, and the boss would say to some Jew there, okay, I'm going to fire everybody, and I'm going to make you the new CEO, What would that boss do? I said, wonderful. Wow. I'm being promoted. Right? But in Israel, the Jews are not in America. Moses said, no. If you're going to do that, God, if you're going to kill these people, verse 15, what will the nations say? That you took them out of Egypt in order to kill them in the wilderness? Said, no, I disagree. You are a God full of mercy, verse 18, full of mercy and long-suffering and loving kindness. And you carry the sins of the many and the sins of the fathers on the sons to the third and the fourth generation. Please forgive these people, the sin of these people, according to the greatness of your grace, mercy. And what did God say? Okay, Moses, I forgive them. Yeah, I forgive them. But we need to analyze not only the forgiveness of God, but what really angered God. The truth didn't anger God. What angered God is that these people that crossed the sea ate manna. These people who were standing there at the foot of Mount Sinai and heard God speak and saw the flames of fire and saw the mountain shake and smoke, these people that experienced God's power and miracles didn't realize that for him, all the enemies of Israel, all the people, nations of Canaan, the seven nations, are like grasshoppers. They said, these 10 people said, we're like grasshoppers in front of the Canaanites. But they didn't realize that the creator of the universe, for them, the enemies of Israel are like grasshoppers. Israel has survived huge empires that tried to wipe us out from the face of the earth. We're still here. And we're going to be here. And we're going to be in Jerusalem when the Messiah comes. We, above all people, have to have faith that exceeds the natural. Faith that exceeds the logical. Because our existence is not logical. There's no other nation from the ancient world. The Babylonians don't exist anymore. The Sumerians, the Elamites, the Egyptian, ancient Egyptians don't exist as an empire anymore. In fact, the whole Arab world is in a mess. And Israel is flourishing. It's the only rose among the thorns in the Middle East. If I was God and I loved my children, I wouldn't have sent them to this bad neighborhood called the Middle East. I would have sent them to Switzerland. Yeah? The neighborhood is better there. Yeah. But God chose the land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea because it was the key to three continents. The road to three continents between Asia and Africa, Europe and Africa, Africa to Asia or Africa to Europe. The only land bridge between these three continents is between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. That was a strategic place to take the children of Israel in spite of the bad neighborhood. The difference between Joshua and Caleb was that they said, we know a God who can. We believe in a God who can. We can have victory with God on our side. That was the only difference between what they said and what the other 10 spies said. We can. Because God is on our side. And as Jewish believers and non-Jewish believers who believe in Yeshua, this has to be our motto. Like Paul says in the letter to the Corinthians, everything with God is yes and amen. And so I urge you all to say yes and amen to God. I urge all the Jews here that have certain fears from immigrating to Israel as believers to say yes and amen to Aliyah. Yeah? To say yes and amen to God. He can. I've seen people who have immigrated 90 years old, not 80 like this brother. And at 90 years old, they never did bar mitzvah when they were young because their parents were very secular from Europe, in this case from England. A 90-year-old man, for the first time in his life, the same day he did bar mitzvah at the Wailing Wall, read from the Torah for the first time in his life, and the same day got baptized in Yeshua. So it's not, nobody's too old to return home. And nobody's too young to return home. I urge all of you, don't rot in the galut, in the diaspora. Come home. In Yeshua's name, have that same faith that Caleb and Joshua had and say, yes, in God we can. Amen. Thank you very much.